I'm Chuck Peters, your host, and as always, it's great to have you back to listen to whatever's happening here on the podcast. We got some exciting things in store. We are recording this episode live during the Etch Family Ministry Conference at the Music City Center in Nashville. If you are not here, we want to welcome you to come back next year. Such a great opportunity to interact with other people who are in ministry just like you and to rub elbows with some awesome thought leaders. And so today we have the opportunity, because we are at Etch, to sit down with one of those thought leaders and get to introduce you to our friend Jason Gibson. Jason, hi.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Man, it's great to have you here. Thank you for being here. Jason is the director of the Babb Center for Counseling at First Baptist Church in Hendersonville, Tennessee, and provides guidance to one of the leading counseling centers that operates from a faith-based perspective. He's got degrees in psychology and social work and education, and he's got a background in summer camp and camp ministry, which is awesome. And so Jason's calling is to equip the church and church teams, including lay leaders, to effectively meet families at their point of need with practical truths that are found in Scripture. And today we're going to talk about some practical solutions for the tech-based family. We're going to get into some technology,
yeah,
things that we're dealing with in the home to give us some solutions and how to lead through that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, before we dive in, though, on our content, we like to ask some questions here on the podcast to get to know what you were like when you were a kid. So first question is, did you grow up in the church as a child? Were you a kid that went to Sunday school and VBS and things like that?
Yes, I did grow up in the church. And actually, it started even before I was born, because my mom said I was due the 1st of April and the church was in revival. And the preacher said, this child's not going to come until revival's over. And the revival went from 1 week and extended to a second week and to a third week. And I kid you not, when the revival was over, I was born like 1 o'clock that morning.
Wow.
On the last night.
So
my first experience at church was in the womb in a 3 week revival.
Well, that's pretty profound.
I don't remember it, though.
Yeah, I would guess not. I would guess it was a little dark in there.
Yeah, it was a little dark.
A little hard to see from the back. Man, all right. So when you were a kid, tell us about summertime. What was the highlight of your summer when you were a kid? What did you like to do?
Man, the highlight was riding bikes. I lived in Florida. We lived on the coast. And at that time, I guess parents just, they're like, just
man,
come back when it's dark.
They would turn you loose,
yes,
and just come home when it's dark.
Yes. So my brother and I would scrounge for change, because we would ride our bike to the donut shop, get a donut, ride around town, go to the mall, get some water, and just get back at home at night. And we were going.
All right, exploring. Tell me about that bike. What'd your bike look like?
Man, it was an old BMX bike. I remember it was shiny blue and had shiny gold little handlebars.
Yeah.
That's about it. I remember that the tires were worn off, because the coolest thing was to see how you could burn rubber by hitting the brakes.
To
skid.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Leaving stripes of rubber was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
That's cool. Now, did you ever get into like jumping your bike?
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, now as a guy,
yeah,
right, we would find old wood, stack the blocks up, and lay whatever board your tires could actually go up on top of that. And many times you would jump, and many times
as fast as you can.
That's right. But other times the boards would fall off, and then you would bust.
And you're over the handlebars.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I remember breaking my glasses as a kid doing something like that, just like that. Yeah.
That's right.
Well, awesome. Jason, man, thank you for sharing some of that with us. Now let's get to our topic of the day. Let's talk about some of this, the tech-focused family. Maybe you can define for us what that is. So, I mean, we know that, you know, parenting in the digital age is an ever-changing adventure.
Yeah, that's right. And what's interesting about it, it's an adventure that we're all on. You're either aware of it or you're not, but you're on it, and your kids are on it. So what I encourage families to do is to step in and to be intentional and to know that as a counselor with a large counseling practice, this is really born out of sitting with families and hearing over and over parents sobbing, saying, I wish I would have known. If I only would have known. And really, that word know or known always comes up, because they just weren't aware.
Huh.
And we need strategies and the ability to step in. So we know, because if you know, you can do something about it. And we've got to be focused so we can step in.
So it sounds like you're talking about specific problem areas that have arisen that looking that they maybe didn't anticipate.
Yeah.
But as they look back, they can connect the dots and see if they had taken a different path. Things may have been different. So give us a couple of scenarios of what kind of situations you might be.
Well, and this is the thing that's interesting. People think that things like pornography and that stuff happens when you're a teen or when you get into middle school, but it's not. That kids, not on their own intention, are ending up in places with images that they're getting burned onto their mind.
They're exposed to,
and their body responds to it, and they don't know what to do with it, and they're caught in this tough place. Mm. And when parents don't know and they find out, then it's really far down on the process to deal with it. Mm. I help parents understand the difference between privacy and secrecy. See, privacy is I keep this personal to keep myself safe. Secrecy is that I hide this so I don't get in trouble. Mm. And we want parents to understand the difference between the two. And we find that kids do things in secret because they don't want to get in trouble, but they get that confused with privacy in keeping them safe. And we try to work with parents to help them know the difference, but how to be in the know. Hmm.
So pornography is kind of an obvious thing, mm-hmm. right? We know it's out there. And, sometimes things pop up in your feed that are inappropriate, even if it's not pornography.
That's right.
You know, that we're very careful with our children to just not let them be connected to the internet without supervision.
That's right.
Just because. But so many friends have devices, and mm-hmm. everywhere you go, there's connectivity.
Yeah.
So what other kinds of pitfalls are out there that we might need to be more aware of?
Yeah, for sure. You know, with kids, what we see a lot more of is just time on technology.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not so much, hey, my kid's not looking at something bad. It's, hey, my kid's been on a device.
Or something horrific.
Anyway, yeah. It's my kid's been on a device for 4 hours today.
Yeah.
And what happens is we begin to isolate ourselves and we miss that whole experience. Here's how a relationship works. I communicate with one person and then they communicate back with me.
Right.
There's a two-way exchange. That's a relationship.
And it usually involves eye contact.
Yeah, all of those things. Expressiveness. That's right.
And reading body language.
That's right. And what happens with our kids when they're on devices, it takes those interactions you have during the day and it cuts it down to maybe 25% of what it typically was.
Yeah.
So then that does the same impact to our relationships. And it's not like that kids are doing this on purpose. I mean, as adults, we've all been on our device.
Then
an hour later, we're like, what did I just do with an hour of my life?
Yeah, and you're just scrolling for the next thing.
Yeah.
And there's definitely an addictive aspect to
Absolutely.
Technology.
And what it is, it's this idea called stopping cues. Okay. See, like when you're reading a book, when do you stop?
When you're at the end of the page.
At the end of the page or the end of the chapter. You know, when you're reading a magazine, you're at the end of the article.
Yeah.
Well, see, social media and games, there's no stopping cue.
It just never ends.
It never ends.
Wow. Yeah.
And what happens is all the social media things, and they actually socially engineer the technology so that you don't want to stop.
Yeah.
Like YouTube, you watch a video, and what do? They show you the next video.
It's going to recommend other ones.
And now they keep changing because they used to just recommend.
Right.
Now they autoplay.
Yes.
So they're trying to reduce those cues to tell you to stop.
And to make you stay longer.
And to make you stay longer. And it's not like YouTube is trying to destroy the family.
No.
YouTube
they're trying
to push
advertising.
They're trying to maximize profits.
Yes.
So the more that you're on their technology, the more money they make.
Right.
But the problem is the more that we're on technology, there's a higher correlation of depression and anxiety and just all these negative outcomes. So as families, we're trying to go against people that know social sciences. And we just got to be practical and be the stopping cues for our kids in a way that works.
So then how do you introduce stopping cues when there aren't any?
Yeah. So it depends on the age of the kid. As my children are older, then I can have more direct conversations.
Yeah.
You know, like I see that they're on it and I say, hey, so let's talk about what good just came out of that. Not in a condemning, shaming way, but like, hey, help me understand because I'm a dad and maybe I don't get it. And some really rich conversations have come out of that. But when the kids are younger, you just structure it. When I work with families, I say there's three roles that you play as a parent. First, you're a commander, right? You're not going to sit with your three-year-old and have a long debate about the dangers of technology.
It's democratic.
Yeah.
Right? Yes.
Right? You just, early on, you're like, hey, this is how it is. And then you go from there to a coach. And as a coach, you're giving them guidelines along the way while they're in the game. You're not doing it for them, but you're telling them what to do. And then ultimately you become a consultant where they come to you. Now, when you're working with kids, you're in that commander coach phase and you tell them what to do or you structure the environment so that they do it right. And when they do them wrong, you pull them to the side and you help coach them along.
Yeah.
So practically speaking, we have a device on our home called Circle. It's okay. a Circle device. There's tons of devices. They're all great. But for my kids, it allots an amount of time that they have. Because what happens is you say to your kid, hey, you've got 30 minutes of time on an iPad.
Yes.
Well, as a parent, you don't really remember. Are they at 8 minutes in or are they at 45 minutes in?
Right.
Until you feel like they've been on it long enough, then you say. Well, we just, it's a fix it and forget it. You get 30 minutes and then they use it. And when it's done, it turns off the internet to that device. So then it teaches them to become accustomed to like, well, how much time do I have left? Yeah. And it keeps me from having to fight with it.
Yes. And then you imagine you become accustomed to about how long that is, and it teaches you to pace yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is so interesting because my oldest daughter, like she from the get-go would just kind of use her time wisely.
Yes.
And daughter number two, she'd come home from school and boom, like within 30 minutes, she was done. Mm. And we had to talk about it. And we're like, okay, so is that what you wanted? Because at the end of the night, you wanted to look at something else.
Yes.
And had some powerful conversations. Some of the devices have tools, like an iPad. You can go to the timer, and you can set the timer for 20 minutes or 5 minutes. Yeah. And you can set it to where it'll automatically shut off at the end of 5 minutes. Mm. It's one of those things where you don't want to get into an argument about it. You just say, here's your 5 minutes, here's your 10 minutes, and then walk away, and they get what they get.
And there are a lot of families, though, who don't regulate that time at all.
Right.
The kids have free access to the devices, and, right. and they can very... very easily get off into a binge on social media that lasts a long, long time.
That's right. That's right. Mm. And what happens is we don't learn the skill on how to deal with boredom. Mm. And that's really a skill.
Wow, that's interesting.
I mean, think about when we would go on trips when we were little kids.
Yeah.
Like we had to play games like find the license plate of all 50 states.
Yes.
And come up with games like find a sign that has the first letter of each letter of the alphabet. And now we go on long trips, and if you're not careful, the ability to communicate is cut off because everyone's so engrossed.
Yes.
And family life happens through communication. If we cut it off, then we're cutting the family off at the legs.
Yeah. Well, so as technology continues to change, there's always something new,
mm-hmm.
right? And so there's all kinds of different portals to get to get onto social media or to be involved with screen time. Mm-hmm. And there are only more and more, and they're more and more savvy to keep us engaged longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems we really need to wake up. You use the word aware. We need to be more aware of our of what's happening in and around our homes.
Yeah, for sure. You know, a lot of times... people try to teach specific technologies to families, and technology always changes.
Yes.
So I encourage people to teach principles.
Mm.
You know, like it doesn't matter what technology you are, but have a plan when you encounter something wrong. What are you going to do if you're looking at something and you shouldn't be?
Mm-hmm.
Right? You realize it.
Yeah,
you
want strategy.
You want our kids to know what to do. But then, like, what do you do if you do something and then you feel remorse and you're like, I did this wrong. I feel really bad about it and I need to do something with it.
Yes.
And then the last plan is, hey, what do we do if I, as a dad, find you doing something wrong? And see, those are skills that when our kids go off to college, they need to know what to do when they accidentally get into something wrong or when they choose something wrong. And we start that training when they're 3, 4, or 5.
Yeah. So what advice do you suggest?
Yeah.
When they're little, when they're young. So, trying to put this in the context of the church, right?
Yeah.
So our listeners are children's ministry leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of us are parents,
mm-hmm.
but we are also coming alongside parents to mm-hmm. advise them. And so as we, what word would you have for us about advising parents about these things?
Yeah. So I would advise them with truth.
Mm.
1 Corinthians 10:13, it is temptation and it handles it in 4 parts.
Mm.
Hey, there's nothing that you are tempted with that other people haven't been.
Yes.
You're not going to be tempted more than you can handle. There's always a way out, and then there's victory. So when I work with parents and families, I remind them that they're not alone and that there is victory. I think the two most powerful words we can share with somebody in a hard place is me too.
Yeah.
Because everyone feels that they're alone. And when you feel like you're alone, then you isolate. And when you isolate, that's when we get entrenched. So I take that verse right there and just walk alongside with somebody. Because what you see is parents are wrestling with their own stuff that many times keep them from feeling like they have the right to help their kids with their stuff. Larry Crabb wrote a book years ago called The Silence of Adam, right? And he talks about how Adam's issue really didn't start when he ate the apple. It started when, and the scripture says it, that Adam was there.
Yes.
And Adam should have said something. And what I don't want us as parents, I want to encourage and equip parents on what they can do and they can say so that they can keep their kids safe and prepare them for a life of technology, because we're all going to have it forever.
Yeah. What are some practical ways that we can do that with our parents? Mm. Does that mean having a meeting? Is it best handled one-on-one? How do you recommend that we, as in the kids' ministry area, engage with moms and dads about this kind of thing?
So I think some practical, I love practical ideas.
Yeah.
Right? I love going to a place where somebody says, this is something you can do right now.
Yes.
And if we can give families stuff you can do right now, you're going to build momentum, and that's what you want. So here's an idea. So when kids want on technology and you say no, they tend to bother you until you give in. So what I would do as a children's pastor, I would create a what to do instead idea guide, right? Just a sheet of paper, write 12 ideas of what you can do instead of technology, and then take that and give it to the parents. And then the parents can take that and put it on the refrigerator so that when their kids' tech time is up, they're like, well, what do we not have anything to do?
Yeah,
well, you've already given them a whole what to do instead, and the parents can point them to the fridge. So then that gives them ideas of all these different things they can do. And parents will love it because now there's ideas of what their kids can do instead of having to figure it out what they're going to do. Because
yes.
It's always easiest to just say, forget it, go get it on YouTube, right. You can
sure.
watch it.
Because in that moment, you have to come up with something for them to do.
Yes.
And that's not easy to do all the time. So to be proactive about that and have that list prepared is a very practical idea.
And you can take that and you can make it age appropriate. Like maybe there's a kindergarten, first grade things to do, and maybe there's a second and third, fourth and fifth.
Sure.
So because those lists need to be very different.
Yes.
And it's almost like you equip the parents with that so it gets the kids off tech and gets them doing activities that are to their benefit and even to their spiritual growth. And that's what we want. I think the other idea, like, technology is not bad. It's what is done with technology
point.
That is bad. And I think it's important because if we hide from technology and then our kids go off to college, they're going to be in big trouble.
Yes.
So let's dive in and find the good things. Like at the center, we provide counseling to missionaries all over the field. That's a good use of technology.
Through technology.
Through technology. Yeah. But what you can do as a parent, I would give parents an activity guide. Like there's a funny video of this lady that tries to order a hamburger in a library. And the librarian says, what are you doing? This is a library. And the lady says, I'm sorry. And she whispers, I want a hamburger. So I would send that to parents of my fourth and fifth graders and say, watch this funny video on YouTube with your fourth grader. And then I want you to ask them these questions. So now what I've done is when I'm waiting at a steakhouse for a restaurant for 45 minutes to get a table, I can pull up this email that the children's minister sent me, and we can watch a funny video and have a meaningful conversation through three conversation prompts.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, if you give that to the parents, they're going to connect to the hearts of their kids, and they'll use technology, and it's a great way to do it.
Yeah, great tip. That's a fantastic tip. Yeah, not to throw the baby out with the bathwater on this. Mm-hmm. Not that all technology is bad.
Yeah,
it's done great things to spread the gospel and for teaching and connectivity and all that, but all things in moderation, I guess, right?
Exactly.
Well, what last words would you have for us as we live in this world of technology? It's pervasive. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. Kids younger and younger have devices. Some of them bring them to church. What would be your last word on how? What words of encouragement would you give to us as we look to engage with the family in these issues?
Yeah. You know, I think I'll tell you probably a final practical way that I use it in ministry is, you know, when people encounter really tough times in their life, when you can remember and follow up, that means the most. Because it's not about what you do for them, it's that if you do it for them. Mm. And as Americans, we tend to not follow through a whole lot.
Yes.
So what I do, and I would encourage all ministers to do, regardless of their position, is when somebody in your ministry area goes through a difficult time, loses somebody in their family, a heartache or whatever it may be, just pull out your phone, take your calendar, and then set a reminder 1 year forward and say, hey, Mrs. Smith lost her daughter. Maybe it's one of your Sunday school teachers lost their daughter. Or an anniversary of death. And just set a little reminder 1 week before that and say, hey, the upcoming anniversary of this person's experience, and then send them a note. See, that's technology, but I'm telling you, just remembering or using tech to help you remember can be transformative to supporting your leaders and to those that you serve in your ministry.
Sure. Great tips. Jason Gibson, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate having you at the Etch Conference and on the podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
And listeners, thank you again for listening, and we hope you'll tune in again soon for another episode of the Kids Ministry 101 podcast.